Is there really a safe amount of alcohol you can drink? I'm Hamza Aziz, the producer of the Talking With Dogs podcast. You might know Talking With Dogs from their popular YouTube channel. Today, we're breaking down whether there's really a safe amount of alcohol you can drink.
How much alcohol is actually safe for us to consume? Welcome to Talking With Dogs. I'm Dr. Brad Weening.
And I'm Dr. Paul Zalza.
Hot topic.
I hate it.
You and a lot of other people.
Yeah, I hate talking about this topic.
Sure.
Because we get a lot of interesting comments.
Yes, passionate.
Yes, passionate
comments. Passionate comments. Mm-hmm. So leave them. Just don't. Please don't be angry, because honestly, if your comments are really angry, we're just going to delete them and block you. So just have a thoughtful, intelligent comment. Just no silly comments. Okay. Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Yeah. This is a very controversial topic, because historically we've learned more and more about potentially some of the negative sides of alcohol and how it affects our bodies and our different systems.
Yeah.
But it has become a very integrated part of our society,
sure,
particularly
is.
In North America, yes. I'd say, in Europe, other parts of the world maybe less so, but it's very integrated, so it becomes difficult to remove if in fact it is bad for us.
Well, there are some cultures that have removed it, some religions.
That's absolutely.
Have not completely removed it, but have a mandate
that yes.
zero tolerance for it.
Yes.
But in general, sort of the environment we live in.
It's complicated.
It's ubiquitous.
Yes, yes. Okay, so let's start at the beginning. We're going to talk a little bit about what alcohol is, how it gets broken down, what it kind of does to your body, and then what the evidence shows about maybe some of the negative health outcomes.
Okay, fine.
Which obviously there's a bunch of them.
Alcohol, it's an organic substance. Organic yes. substance just means a substance or molecule that has carbon in it.
Carbon.
So it's essentially a naturally occurring
right.
molecule.
Ethanol. Yes.
That ethanol is one type of alcohol. That's the kind that's in drinks. And
yes.
it's basically you have a carbon group attached to a carbon group. And that carbon group that makes an alcohol has an OH attached to it.
There you go.
Right? And that OH group is the reactive group that
right.
interacts in other chemical reactions. It's weakly
yep.
acidic.
Yep.
Dissolves in water pretty good.
Yep.
Because of the hydrogen bonds it can create.
That's why it can dissolve and mix with other.
That's why you can make a martini.
There you go. Now you know.
Yeah, so that's basically all it is.
Right. And so when it comes into our mouth, just like any other product, liquid, food, or whatever, our body starts to process it.
Okay.
So
we're going to talk about the chemistry of it in our body now.
The chemistry of alcohol. So when alcohol comes into our body, it is broken down in a series of events leading down to carbon dioxide and water.
Nothing wrong with carbon dioxide and water.
Obviously, it's everywhere, right? So the first thing is alcohol is broken down by alcohol dehydrogenase.
Okay, that's an enzyme. Enzymes are chemicals or molecules in your body that help you perform chemical processes. We think of digestion as one of them. They just catalyze or speed up chemical processes. So alcohol dehydrogenase helps to dehydrogenase alcohol and
yes.
to break it down
into a compound called acetaldehyde.
That's the problem, because that's not such a good compound to
it
have.
It even sounds like other things in our world, like formaldehyde, that are not good for us, used to preserve dead bodies. Mm-hmm. Pathologists are exposed to this, so we know this is not good for us.
Acetaldehyde.
So, yeah, so it has a name that sounds like it, and you're like, huh.
Even the first part of that word isn't very appealing.
Yes, it's A-C-E-T, but yeah, okay. Sure.
And that is a carcinogen, class one carcinogen.
And I would actually say that alcohol is considered a class one carcinogen.
Because of
the acetaldehyde, this
transient process in its breakdown.
Right. And then the acetaldehyde gets broken down into acetate by acetaldehyde dehydrogenase.
Okay.
And then eventually acetate gets broken down to carbon dioxide and water.
There you go, the good things at the end of the day. It's those transient reactions
right.
that cause some problems, as you're going to see in a minute here
right.
in our bodies.
And some of this starts in the mouth with salivary amylase having some of these enzymes. About 20% of our digestion occurs in the stomach, and then about 80% or so happens in the intestines.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So what's the issue? Why does it matter? If it all ends up at carbon dioxide and water,
why does
it even matter?
Yeah. It matters because the acetaldehyde along the way
yep.
can cause damage to your tissues. The fact that it's weakly acidic can cause damage to your tissues.
Right.
And the fact that it doesn't just go to carbon dioxide and water right away, it spends some time at these intermediate steps that can damage your body
right.
in
and
certain
the,
ways.
And the main issue is that the enzyme that breaks down acetaldehyde to acetate is a rate-limiting enzyme. So
right.
there's a fixed amount of this enzyme in our body. It changes a little bit with who you are and where you're from. Some East Asian cultures that actually are relatively intolerant of alcohol actually have a very low or even a potentially deficient amount. And in the average person, this allows us to metabolize about one alcoholic drink per hour.
And that's kind of the magic number you've heard all along.
Right.
People, then that's traditionally what we have thought was a safe amount.
Right.
Traditionally.
Because that's what your body can clear. So then theoretically, if your body can clear that much, you would avoid particularly the intoxication side of things so that you'd be safe to function or potentially drive a car. This can change with the size of your body. If you're a smaller person or a larger person, that can affect it. Whether you consume the alcohol on an empty or a full stomach because of that stomach digestion, that can alter this. So
and your ethnic background.
Ethnic background. But this is definitely a ballpark.
Sure.
But this is why. And so what happens then is to say if you drink more than one drink per hour, A, even though it breaks that down at that rate, you are still exposed to acetaldehyde. That's the first thing.
Right.
Some people are like, well, if I stay below one an hour, then can my body just break it all down?
Because it's part of that breakdown process.
Because it's not instantaneous. So you still have exposure to acetaldehyde. And then the other thing is that as it floats around, that's when it does damage to some of our cells.
Okay, so we're just going to go through now some of the chemical processes in your body on your different organs and organ systems and what it can do to them. This isn't clinical evidence-based, although some of it is later we'll discuss, but just strictly speaking from your grade 12 biology class, these are some of the things that can happen.
Right. So the first thing is it affects your brain, and anyone that's ever consumed an alcoholic beverage would know that it has potential to alter some of your brain, your cognition, and your muscular function. This is because of neurotransmitters like GABA and glutamate that it mimics and activates and that kind of thing.
Okay. And even before it gets to your brain, it's got to go through your stomach. As we said, part of it's absorbed in the stomach.
Right.
We said it's weakly acidic, and it can affect the lining of your stomach. And when you damage the lining of your stomach, we call that an ulcer.
Right.
So it can lead to ulcers.
So yeah, not only because it's acidic, but also can increase your acid secretion, making the relative environment more acidic and causing ulcers, which is a problem. Number three is an obvious one, and that's liver function. So because the lion's share of alcohol is processed in your liver, this can lead to fatty liver. So people that drink a lot of alcohol can develop a fatty liver. They can get hepatitis or inflammation of the liver.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have chronic exposure to alcohol and chronic hepatitis, this can lead to scarring of the liver or something called cirrhosis, which actually leads to liver failure.
Mm-hmm.
And that is obviously a problem.
Right. And also cancer can arise in the liver.
Yes, especially related to the scarring, for sure.
Which can happen down the road. You know, and this isn't going to happen from one drink an hour, once or twice a week. This would be a lot of alcohol use.
Right, repetitive chronic exposure.
To damage your liver.
Oh, on a side note, this is also why studies have shown that drinking one drink a day for 7 days is actually better than having seven drinks in one day because of overwhelming this fixed rate of acetaldehyde breakdown. So binge drinking has been shown to be worse for a host of other reasons behaviorally, but also metabolically.
Right.
It's bad for you too.
So when I moved all my drinks out of the week to the weekend, I was...
So now what we need you to do is maybe spread it over the whole day. You just got to start in the morning.
Yeah. That'll go over for a good Saturday.
Yeah.
All right. So we've said, what happened? What's it doing to your genes? There is some effect on your genes, actually, your genetic makeup.
Yeah.
Displacing genes, getting into your genome, damaging genes. And whenever that happens, cancer is something we worry about whenever you're talking about genetic modification or genetic damage.
Yep.
That's why the risks of cancers that have been discovered clinically can occur.
For a host of reasons, including inflammation, increasing incidence of reactive oxygen species. We've talked about this before, so oxidation is a bad thing, as well as its effect on folate. So it reduces folate absorption in our bodies, and folate is a key player in DNA repair and processes that repair damage to our DNA. And the trouble is, a lot of the rapidly turning over cells, like of our mouth, of our throat, and of our esophagus, when cells are turning over quickly, there's a higher chance they make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the mistakes that happen in our genes are repaired by our bodies. They are capable of doing this on a very critical level. Sometimes the mistakes aren't even important, so they don't become a problem. But when they do become a problem, it's folate-driven processes that can repair some of these. And when they don't work properly, increases the risk that you get a gene that creates a tumor that can lead to cancer.
Okay, so... That's the chemistry of it. Are we done with the
chemistry? No, a couple more things. So I'd say about the hormonal side. So it has been shown to increase insulin resistance and affects your body's way dealing with insulin and sugars. It also increases your aromatase activity, which is an enzyme that converts testosterone to estrogen. So this has two problems. So for men, reduces your testosterone. In the short term, actually, can reduce it very quickly. Mm-hmm. And then longer term can have chronic effects on something called your Leydig cells that affect our sperm counts even. And for women, when it converts to estrogen, increasing amounts of circulating estrogen can increase the impact of estrogen-related cancers, and not just things like BRCA1 and 2, but all breast cancers are related to estrogen.
Okay, so that's the chemistry.
Sure, the chemistry.
And then we always go with like the theory of what's going on, and yep. then we try and see, well, are there clinical studies? Is there clinical evidence to support some of the damage that we've talked about from the chemistry of it all?
Yep.
And traditionally, or older research into alcohol.
Yes.
You may have been familiar with, I reached the media several years ago that, hey, a couple of glasses of wine a day turn out to be good for you. That's what that came out of France,
for I think, sure.
Originally.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, "Whew! Thank God, I'm going to live forever."
Right.
However, since then,
they've looked closer.
There's been a more recent body of evidence that suggests, well, hey, maybe that's not true. Maybe right. a couple of drinks a day. I know the recommended intake in North America is 2 drinks a day maximum for men, 1 drink a day for women. That's what the
U.S.
Has suggested. There's now some evidence that says, hey, maybe that's not good for you.
Yeah, and that's called the French paradox. A lot of people are like, well, what about the people in France? They're having wine with every meal. And so what they did is they looked at the data closer, and there's a couple things that they realized. First, the control group, when they were comparing drinkers to the non-drinking group, often the non-drinking group wasn't a lifelong non-drinking group.
No.
Sometimes there are people that maybe used to drink a lot and then now are non-drinkers, so that makes them a slightly different population. That's the first thing. So they're like, hey,
yeah.
These people essentially could have been sick from their history of drinking. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is that lifestyle modifiers were a big part of it. Mm-hmm. So in France, there were lower incidence of obesity. They lived a more active lifestyle. They actually ate more whole foods and less ultra-processed foods. So
right.
the way that they lived was actually significantly different.
So if you're just picking out the variable of wine,
right.
you're missing out all these other variables. So you can't attribute the outcome to just that one variable, wine, because of all these other variables. And that's the problem with alcohol research.
Is and observational studies too, right?
You mentioned the abstaining bias because if you're comparing to a group that is just not drinking now, but hasn't abstained their whole life, so that's going to introduce a bias when you're comparing the groups. And then the other issues with a lot of these studies that require on self-reporting of alcohol use. And what were we taught in medical school? When you ask someone how many alcoholic drinks they have.
We usually joked about doubling it.
It wasn't even a joke.
Yeah.
I was taught that's what you do.
Yeah.
When you write
like
up,
if someone said, I have 5 drinks a week, you're like, this guy
that's
for sure
10 drinks. 10. That was just a thing. That was just what we were taught in medical school. Whatever someone says about alcohol intake, double it.
Except if someone said they didn't drink, usually they were probably telling the truth.
Well,
not all
double
the time.
Of zero.
Zero.
Is
right.
still
but I think,
zero.
I think, yeah. There's, but I agree, generally, people underreport. I think people underreport what they eat, they underreport what they drink, they overreport how much
they exercise. Right.
Yeah.
You're talking to me.
Sure.
That's exactly what I do.
And what's interesting is that recently they've looked at the data for incidence of things like liver and esophageal cancer in these countries that drink a lot, and they actually are higher.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, having said that, as we've said before, the best way to prove something clinically is with a double-blinded, randomized, placebo-controlled trial.
Right.
That's not going to happen with alcohol.
Nope.
Okay? For many ethical reasons and cost reasons and feasibility reasons, it's just not going to happen.
Yep.
So we have to use the best evidence we have to try and draw conclusions as to whether or not alcohol is, how bad it is for you or if it's good for you.
Right.
So the overwhelming body of evidence that we've come across would suggest that intake of alcohol in any amount is not good for you.
Agreed. This is a significant paradigm shift in the last 20 years.
I would say so.
Yeah.
So, cancers. Probably about, 7 cancers
yes.
that I came across.
So I'd say mouth, throat, esophageal, liver, breast, colon. So the 6 are the big
mouth,
ones for sure.
Mouth, throat, esophageal, liver. Those are all in the pathway of where that alcohol molecule is going
right.
when it enters your body. Those are obvious ones.
Yeah.
And then the cancers we've talked
about. So the estrogen is because of the hormones and the changes there. And for the colon cancer, the thought is a bunch of different things. One, it totally disrupts your microbiome, which again, we talk about this, I feel like every video about food and things like that. And it has potential to make your gut slightly more leaky, so increased inflammation, as well as increased reactive oxygen species. And some of the bacteria there that now are growing have an increased chance of causing cancer.
Okay.
So increased risk of colon cancer as well.
So No randomized controlled trial to prove it, but I feel comfortable after reading the literature that yes, alcohol does play a significant role in those cancers.
And knowing that acetaldehyde is a carcinogen, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the chemistry we talked about before, so the clinical results make sense.
Right.
People might say, well, what if I only have like one or two drinks a day, like the recommended amount is?
Yep.
It appears that even at that low frequency, the risk of this cancer exists.
Right. On a side note, too, a lot of people are like, well, this enzyme is the problem. Can't I just take some exogenous enzyme? Mm. Can't I do something? So I looked into it. There's a few ways that they say you could increase some of this activity, but it's not scientifically proven. But taking some of the precursors like NAD and some of the multivitamins. But again, this is not a solution to kind of hack your acetaldehyde dehydrogenase system. Not possible.
So those cancers increase risk.
Yeah.
The obvious ones, it is because of its effect on the brain, it is addictive, its effect on the dopamine system. It is addictive.
Yeah.
But that's nothing new. We're not teaching anything new, but a lot of people say, well, you know what? I can handle a drink or two a day and I don't get addicted.
Well, and interestingly, people take it because they have anxiety, like to relax them sometimes because they're feeling sad.
Yeah.
And this increases your anxiety and depression and also disturbs your sleep. So it really negatively affects, I think that's accepted.
Yeah, and I would say proponents of alcohol intake or someone who doesn't believe in some of the negative effects of alcohol might say, well, it does decrease social anxiety.
Yep.
So if it is going to increase my social activity, and we know that social interaction is one of the pillars of health. So I buy that argument. If you say, oh, yeah, well, it decreases my social anxiety, so it enables me to socialize more, which is good for me, right? Sure, that is. However, is that worth the price that you're paying with the other negative effects? It's something you have to decide.
Right.
It seems like no, but because you can, you know, there's other ways to decrease your social anxiety
rather
than alcohol, which aren't as bad for you as that. Someone else might say, well, it relaxes me at the end of the day, right, which reduces my anxiety.
Yep.
And we know that getting your anxiety into control and reducing your stress is one of those pillars of health that's good for you. Yes, it is.
Yep.
So I buy that argument. If you say that, I agree with that. However, perhaps there's other ways you can reduce your anxiety at the end of a stressful day that aren't bad for you.
Agreed.
And then any other?
Well, so the cardiovascular side, people used to think, oh, this is going to vasodilate me. You know, you get flushed. Yep. So initially there is a vasodilation. So your blood pressure goes down, you get flushed. However, chronically, because of the damage that it causes to your endothelium, it is associated with atrial fibrillation, cardiomyopathy, and actually high blood pressure, not low blood pressure. A lot of people say, well, resveratrol, you know, that molecule that's in the grapes, the amount that you get in alcohol is so low that certainly using it as a way to get that is not valid. The amounts that are used in studies are hundreds of times stronger, so not a valid way to get that. So that argument breaks down.
And a few other body systems.
Sure.
We've talked about chemically the endocrine system, and there is now some evidence that shows that it does affect your insulin resistance in your body, increasing your insulin resistance. Your endocrine function.
Your immune system, kind of all of your systems, really.
Yeah, so the clinical evidence now is really starting to match what we talked about is going on chemically in your body.
Yes.
Now, for those of you that are proponents or don't believe in the clinical evidence.
Okay. Conspiracy theorists, there are many.
I wouldn't say that. I would just say if you're an avid reader and you're always looking for evidence, you might come across this. And I was happy to come across this because I enjoy having a drink every now and again.
Here you go.
New report, it's from December 2024. New report reviews evidence on moderate alcohol consumption and health impacts. I read this and I was like, thank God. It's from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine.
Oh, sounds so important.
They sound important.
Right. So an academic institution?
No, not quite an academic, private institution.
Private, okay.
But still, their mandate is to remain unbiased.
Sure, unbiased funding source, obviously.
No, they do get some funding. Yeah, they get funding from industry.
Sure.
But they say they want to remain unbiased.
Well, I'm sure the alcohol producers of the world, they want the truth to get out.
They probably don't because they are a company and they want to continue selling alcohol, like tobacco companies like to continue selling tobacco.
Okay.
However,
here we go.
They promise to try to be unbiased.
Okay.
And they came out, so they basically looked at all the evidence that's out there.
This is recent, December 17th of 2024. It's like a month ago.
They didn't do any scientific experiments or clinical studies themselves. They reviewed the literature. So they were appointed by the government to review literature and review science of complex problems to counsel the government to make policies.
And essentially the same literature that other people have reviewed to find the things that we've talked about today so far.
Yeah.
Okay.
So their intentions are pure.
Yes. No.
So they on all-cause mortality, they conclude that with moderate certainty, that compared with never consuming alcohol, moderate alcohol consumption is associated with lower all-cause mortality. All-cause mortality refers to the total number of deaths in a population due to any cause. So that's what they thought from all the literature that you and I looked at.
Shocking.
That's the conclusion they came up with. So we just want to address this because it is published. It's in the literature.
Someone's going to leave a comment saying, hey, didn't you read this?
Yeah, we did.
Hey, guys, get with the new information.
In terms of weight changes, they looked at BMI change, obesity. The report says...
Let me guess. Helps you lose weight.
No conclusions could be drawn.
Okay,
no conclusion.
Yeah.
Cancer,
here we go.
No, they conclude with moderate certainty that consuming a moderate amount of alcohol is associated with a higher risk of female breast cancer.
Okay.
It also concluded with low certainty that higher amounts of moderate alcohol consumption associated with a higher risk of breast compared to lower, so more alcohol is bad.
Yep.
The report concluded with low certainty that higher amounts of moderate consumption are associated with higher risk of colorectal cancer.
Okay.
But then they said no evidence when you're looking at colorectal with moderate alcohol consumers versus lifelong non-consumers. Nor could an association be made with moderate alcohol consumption, oral cavity, pharyngeal, esophageal, or laryngeal cancers.
Okay. Anything else there?
Well, cardiovascular disease. You're not going to like this one. So the report concludes that compared with never consuming alcohol, consuming moderate amounts of alcohol is associated with a lower risk of non-fatal myocardial infarction, heart attack.
So if I drink, I'll have a lower chance of having a non-fatal heart attack, okay?
Okay, and then neurocognition, no conclusion, no effect on neurocognition or advancing dementia.
Interesting.
In fact, I think,
That's cool. And what's neat about that is it shows our viewers that you honestly can just say whatever you want.
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say that that the literature can be interpreted in different ways.
Yes, and I would argue that I'd use the phrase manipulated in a way that shows what you want it to show. And this, unfortunately, is exactly why our viewers are like, what am I supposed to believe? Is fat good? Is fat bad? Is sugar good? Is sugar bad? You know, it's so unfair to the average person who doesn't get to look at this through a specific lens.
You're not going to like who the sponsor was either.
Okay, here we go.
The sponsor is by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food and Nutrition Services.
So the people that sell the stuff are writing an article to say that the stuff's not bad for you. That's so weird.
Yes. I mean, so I think you might look at this and think, oh, well, this says alcohol is good. Or you might think and say this committee was formed to inform and help develop recommendations for the government. Or if you had more of a negative attitude, you might say, oh, no, this committee was formed to justify certain recommendations that the government has already made. So is it created to inform or to justify?
Sure.
That's one thing that came across my mind when I was reading it. I don't know the answer to that.
I think when they were done this paper, they might have gone, cheers, everybody, great job.
Or I'm not going to slam the reviewers. I mean, it just shows you that the literature is up for interpretation.
And it's for sale.
And the way we've interpreted it is that, it's pretty clear to us that
it seems inconsistent with the overall
any amount of alcohol is bad for you. That's our position. However, we recognize that other groups have reviewed the literature and come up with different conclusions.
And at the end of the day, we're not saying don't drink. We're saying make an informed choice. Our channel is all about helping you make healthy choices. We don't want you to make our choices. We have a drink every now and then, but we want people to be informed and make educated choices that are based on facts, not someone else. Because nowadays, whether it's your phone, whether it's the TV, everyone is trying to sway you to do this or to buy that. We don't want you to be duped.
Yeah.
And so if you do it and you get some of the consequences, we don't want you to go, wow, I wouldn't have done that if I didn't know. If I knew cancer was going to be a problem, I wouldn't have drank. Well, then you get to make the choice.
And we are not sponsored by
anybody.
Alcoholics Anonymous or anyone against drinking.
Nobody.
And literally, we review the research and change our lives accordingly.
Like all the
before
time.
I started looking at the alcohol literature, I used to have maybe one or two drinks a night during the week as recommended by the...
Especially on the tough days.
Especially
filming days.
Like today. however, after reviewing the literature, I drastically reduced my alcohol intake personally.
Sure.
Just to tell you, that's how I felt about the literature that was out there.
Okay. Now you know, please leave a comment. Let us know what you think about the research, about this other paper, about your experience with alcohol. If you like this video, please like, subscribe to our channel, share it with someone that you know would be interested in this topic.
And the Surgeon General.
Surgeon General.
Is wanting to put labels.
Yeah.
And that might be something we're going to see, just like on cigarette packages, on alcohol, beverages, there may be labels coming up soon saying that, hey, this does cause cancer.
We'll see what happens.
See how that does, see how that mixes in your drink.
There you go.
Remember, you are in charge of your own health and you are in charge of how much alcohol you drink.
Absolutely. We'll see you next time.